Hello, everybody, and welcome in to a special Sports Talk Chicago podcast. In today's show, we'll be examining the Khalil Mack trade and what it means for the Bears come week one of the 2018 season. Plus, later in the show, we'll have a very special guest on. He played at Notre Dame for 3 years and was their star quarterback. He even led them to a bowl appearance and a bowl win back in 2014, and now he has his sights set on making it to the NFL and making an impact during his rookie season. Now, before we get started today, I have a two-part question for those of you listening at home. Number one, how did the Bears end up getting Khalil Mack? How was he available in the first place, and what do the Bears plan on doing with him come week one of the season? And number two, and this one applies to the Bears and their personnel and how they're going to look in the future, what does Ryan Pace's job security look like after the Khalil Mack trade? So yeah, these are two important questions, both for Khalil Mack and for the Bears and their future. I'll have answers to both of those here in just a couple of moments. First, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Now that the 2018 season is over, get ready for 2019. Season tickets go on sale in March. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's go back to the two questions I posed at the beginning of the show. First off, let's explore the reason why the Raiders ended up giving up Khalil Mack, which again, makes no sense from a performance standpoint. This guy's gotten 10 or more sacks in each of the past 3 seasons, he's been a Pro Bowler in each of the past 3 seasons, and a first-team All-Pro player in 2015 and 2016. I mean, the numbers are there, the performance is there. He is an elite defender, probably one of the best in the game, right next to Aaron Donald. So again, the question remains, why in the world would the Raiders end up getting rid of him? Ironically enough, as crazy as that question sounds, there's a real simple answer to it. It's called a business. The NFL is a business, and the Raiders made some very poor investments when it comes to keeping certain players on the team. Case in point, the Raiders signed their quarterback Derek Carr to a mega extension instead of worrying about Mack. Carr's getting $125 million, 70 of which is guaranteed, and his performance doesn't even justify it. I mean, Carr had that one good year where he was contending for the MVP, then got hurt, and last season, he looked like a shell of himself. I mean, the fundamental question with Carr and his extension is, are you willing to pay top dollars for a slightly above average quarterback? Because Carr last year posted a QB rating of 86.4 and had 22 touchdowns and 13 interceptions. Now, to me, that's not worthy of a 5-year, $125 million deal. And unfortunately for the Raiders, they didn't realize that till it was too late. Now they're stuck with Derek Carr as their starting quarterback, which again isn't a bad thing, but he's not worth the money that he's getting paid. Now you would think from this entire endeavor that the Raiders have learned their lesson. They understand they're not going to give out ridiculous amounts of money to okay or above average players, but yet again, they're making a bad decision, as right now it's being reported that they're holding out and saving money to extend Amari Cooper, their number one wide receiver. Now, what truly puzzles me about this report is the fact that the Raiders are planning on giving more money to their wide receiver when Khalil Mack was clearly a more valuable player for them. I mean, as I mentioned, Mack's a 3-time Pro Bowler, a 2-time first-team All-Pro, and each of the past 3 seasons, he's posted 10 or more sacks, with a career-high 15 in 2015. Amari Cooper is a good wide receiver, sure. He's had 2 straight years of 1,000 yards, but last year, he had only 680 in the same amount of time. Although he's only 24, technically, his career's on the downturn. So why reward him and incentivize him to come back to the team, but let a guy like Khalil Mack end up leaving? That, to me, that entire logic shows me just how crazy and how stupid the Raiders organization is and how they deal with re-signing guys and retaining core players. And just think about this for a minute. The Raiders were willing to pay $100 million over 10 years to get John Gruden to come back and coach, but yet they're not willing to pay Khalil Mack a reasonable salary to be the best defender on their team? That whole logic right there explains why the Raiders are going to be on the downturn this season. And it's true, everyone's predicting them to go 5-11 or 6-10. That's a far cry from a couple years ago when they were Super Bowl contenders until Derek Carr got hurt. But one question still remains. Does the Raiders' bad decision about Khalil Mack come to help or hurt the Bears? And what does it mean about Ryan Pace and his job security in the near future? Now, I know you guys must be thinking, John, why would you even think that? I mean, Ryan Pace went all in. He did everything to ensure that the Bears would end up winning this year. Well, it's not as clear-cut as you guys think. Because remember, the Bears themselves have made some very bad decisions when it comes to investing in defensive players. And no two guys come to mind more than Jared Allen and Julius Peppers. I mean, going back to the time when the Bears got Jared Allen, I couldn't be more excited. I mean, this guy was a 5-time Pro Bowler, he was one of the best defenders in the NFL, and he even almost tied the NFL single-season sack record with 22 back in 2011. He was a proven superstar and was on track to become a first-ballot Hall of Famer. So naturally enough, as these things usually go, the Bears rewarded him monetarily, and Allen responded by posting a career low in sacks in one season with 5.5, despite playing in 15 of the 16 games. After that dismal 2014 season, Allen came back in 2015 and played 3 games with the Bears, recording 0 sacks before being traded away to the Carolina Panthers. That signing, although well-intentioned, was arguably one of the worst signings the Bears have ever completed here in the new century. And don't forget, it only gets worse from here, because now we'll go back and talk about the Julius Peppers signing. The Bears had signed Peppers away from Carolina after he made 5 Pro Bowl teams in a number of seasons there. Apparently, it didn't matter that Peppers was entering his age 30 season and that his career could be on the downturn. And sure enough, his first year here in Chicago wasn't really that good. And I know he made a Pro Bowl. I am still shocked as to how he did. He only posted 8 sacks, which was the first time that he didn't post double-digit sacks since 2007. And sure, he posted a couple of above-average seasons back in 2011 and 2012, but in 2013, his last year as a Bear, things went downhill quickly as he posted only 7 sacks despite starting in every single game of the season. That prompted the Bears to release him and once again realized that they made yet another mistake defensively. And now that I've told both of these stories, you're probably wondering to yourself, who was the moron who made these signings and what's he doing right now? Well, guess what? At the time, it was Phil Embry. And after the 2014 season, the day after to be exact, he was fired. But let me give some more context on that, because at the time, once Embry was fired, no one opposed it. Everyone was happy. They knew that he made bad decisions. He put the Bears in a horrible spot organizationally. So it was only time to fire him and Mark Trestman on that same day. Now, why am I saying all of this? Why am I sitting here and recounting these memories of the past? Well, that's because Ryan Pace right now could be facing the music if things don't work out with Khalil Mack. I mean, think about it. Those signings by Embry were well-intentioned. Both guys in Peppers and Allen are future Hall of Famers, at least in my opinion. And at the time, those signings were revered. They were beloved by everyone here in Chicago. Yet in the end, because both of those guys didn't perform well in a Bears uniform, Phil Embry got the axe. Now let's fast forward to today with Khalil Mack. Mack got acquired by the Bears, and now they just inked him to a 6-year, $141 million deal, which makes him the highest-paid defensive player in the entire league. That's a big commitment by the Bears. They're willing to pay Khalil Mack, and they've given up 2 first-round picks to get him. What if it doesn't work out? What if Khalil Mack can't match his past production? What does that mean for the Bears organizationally? I mean, it's okay to be overjoyed and happy about this signing, especially because it bolsters the Bears defensively, but again, if things don't work out, the Bears are stuck at square one again, because now they've committed so much money to Khalil Mack, and they've given up all of their first-round picks. If this doesn't work out, the Bears have set a dangerous precedent. Now, the one good thing about this entire situation is the fact that Ryan Pace has proved that he's willing to take a risk for the Bears and their future. He realizes that getting a guy like Khalil Mack could shift your team's appearance from a 6-10 or 7-9 team to a possible playoff contender. He wants to win now, and he's done what he can from an operation standpoint to make that happen. Now, whether Khalil Mack performs well or not is still yet to be seen, but kudos to Ryan Pace for putting his job on the line for the sake of winning right now. And with that, it's time for our special guest. He began his college football career in 2013 as a redshirt freshman at Notre Dame. By 2014, he had won the starting quarterback job and led the Fighting Irish to an unprecedented bowl win over LSU. After playing two more seasons at Notre Dame, he transferred to Florida, posting a 106 quarterback rating in four games with the Gators. Today, he's an NFL free agent and ready to make an impact. Please welcome Malik Zaire to the show. Malik, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
Man, thank you so much again for allowing me to come on the show, man. It's been great. On a mission, you know, just trying to get things to win, and I've still reached those heights I want to reach.
Well, to start today, Malik, I wanted to talk about your college decision process, because you were such a standout back in Ohio during your high school days, and I'm sure you had lots of offers on the table. Why'd you choose to attend Notre Dame, and do you feel that you made the right choice now that it's all said and done?
Well, yeah, Notre Dame, I mean, it's just one of those opportunities that I feel like you just can't pass up. There's so much that they offer, and there's so much tradition and legacy that comes with it. It was just an honor to, you know, get an opportunity to be a part of that, and that's something that I couldn't turn down with having all the other offers and opportunities I had going on, you know what I mean? So, man, it was just an incredible opportunity to be a part of Notre Dame, and I don't ever look back or regret things that I do. If I had to go back again, I think I would do the same thing over again. So, really happy with my decision I made to go to Notre Dame, and it was just once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get a chance to play there.
And tell me about what happened in 2014, where you were competing with Everett Golson for the starting job, because you were the backup, and then after that USC game, things changed. How'd you become the starter for Notre Dame?
Well, I mean, it's just like you always preach at Notre Dame, having the next man in mentality. And, you know, I had gotten an opportunity to step in when things were always going well. But, you know, that I saw that as my opportunity to play well and play with my friends that, you know, I worked so hard with, you know, in the off season and throughout that season to get a chance to play. So, you know, Coach Kelly put me in there, and we made something shape, and kind of the rest of history from there for me. And, you know, I couldn't be more thankful for that chance, especially playing with those guys around me.
And sure enough, you know, later that season, you stayed in as the starting quarterback and led the Fighting Irish to the Music City Bowl championship. You know, many say that was the best game of your career. What went right for you that day?
It was just the spirit of, you know, what everything was going on. I mean, it was really my first ever chance to really start, and so I wanted to make an impact, and it was like I chance to play with the guys that, you know, I kind of went through all this, you know, adversity and stuff with it. Honestly, it was just once in a lifetime. It was one of those movie moments where it just everything from the water tasted great, you know what I mean? So it happened for us, and we were able to get the victory over a good team in LSU that we played, who ended up having a lot of guys that are playing now in the NFL. You know, we got a lot of guys that play on Instagram now in the NFL, so it was just a really cool opportunity.
Malik Zaire here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Malik, how did it feel after that game? Because you were crowned the MVP of the whole bowl game. How'd that feel for you?
Honestly, it was just good to get a win. You know, as a starting quarterback, you calculate how good you are on my team based off your wins and losses. And that was my first, you know, actual win starting the game. And, you know, I couldn't be more proud. Our MVP was really for the team, man. They really supported me and really got me through, you know, a tough situation, man. I mean, that's the first game we started against a defense that, you know, was top in the country at that time. And having those big, talented guys around you keep their poise helped me keep my poise. So it really was the MVP of the whole team that day. I mean, everybody played great, and it was just a testament to what we continued moving forward from there.
So you do great in the Music City Bowl. You lead your team to victory. And then the following season, you were forced to compete with DeShone Kizer once again for the starting quarterback job. Did you find that unfair a little bit? Because, you know, you're going through all of this competition. You've already proven yourself. how did you feel about the fact that you had to compete so much to just retain your starting job?
Man, I guess that's just one of the toughest things about life. You know, you can't always, you know, predict your situation. You can't always choose the things, the being things that you want. But at the end of the day, you got to control what you can control. And, you know, it may not be the most suitable in your own opinion about what's going on. But, you know, I think getting through stuff like that makes you a tougher person and it makes you a stronger person. I mean, it's definitely not easy when everything's going right and then, you know, something that you can't control happens. But I think we all learn something from that at the end of the day, too. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just glad that to be in a position like that, to even be considered as a top guy at the time and to be in that Notre Dame position as a quarterback, I mean, not many lefties are doing it. And just to even be in that cycle, I think, was just good for me. But at the end of the day, I mean, you can't look back on things that happen and you just got to keep moving forward.
You know, you are a lefty quarterback, and I wanted to ask, I know your nickname is Lucky Lefty. I assume that came from playing in Notre Dame, am I right?
I've always been a lucky lefty, man. I mean, I think any lefty that can even make it this far, I think, is a testament. Cause there's no lefties really out here. I mean, you got Tua, who's doing a great job at Alabama, that's running things well, and I just think having the opportunity to just be in great positions all the time is lucky for me, so... Just keeping it moving.
So going back to that year where you had to compete with DeShone Kizer for your starting job, in game two of that season, you fractured your ankle, and then your season was immediately over. How difficult was it for you to overcome that injury?
Well, you know, I think God gives, you know, people challenges to, you know, see a better side of themselves. And, you know, that 2015 year where I had gotten hurt, it was tough, man. It was tough because we had the fact that we didn't accomplish everything and then I had gotten hurt so early was like, dang, man, you know, it's one of those things that happen in life. But coming back the next year and then having to go through a whole nother competition, a whole nother, you know, set of teams and even coming off an injury, I think, just made me a stronger person, a more battle-tested person. I mean, I believe I'm the most battle-tested quarterback Notre Dame's had. Just getting the time, just even getting playing time. But, you know, I think I took a lot from that. And, man, I feel like I've gotten even better since then. So it's just all about your opportunity, man. I mean, I think the guys that I've competed with are all doing really well. And, I mean, those are great quarterbacks themselves. So it's nothing of, you know, being better or worse than. It's just an opportunity to be in front of great talent that, you know, I think we've, and playing ourselves in some kind of Notre Dame history somewhere.
So 2 years following your injury, you had decided to transfer to Florida as a fifth-year graduate student. Why did you end up leaving Notre Dame?
Well, you know, I felt like, you know, I did what I came to do, and that's graduate and from the University of Notre Dame, and I did it in 3.5, and I knew at that point that, you know, I've given all I could, I felt like, to Notre Dame, and you know, things have better opportunities and better situations in other places that, you know, I think it was cool to see that, you know, you can do recruitment for a second time around, you know, I mean, it's a little different that you have 1 year, but but it was cool to see that that kind of recruitment feel back like in high school when you get to explore different options and, you know, I felt like I gave a lot to Notre Dame and they gave a lot to me, so just an opportunity to do something different.
Well, after your time at Florida, you went undrafted, but did get picked up by the Jacksonville Jaguars as part of their rookie minicamp. How did that go, and what's your status with the team, and rather, with the NFL in general, what's your status right now going into the regular season starting up here in a week or two?
Man, it was a dream come true, you know, playing or getting invited to, you know, the childhood team growing up. Like, I love Jacksonville. That was, like, my team. That was my team, so... even getting the invite down there to camp, I played really well. They liked me a lot. You know, the numbers don't always suit. You know, it's a business, so, you know, you got to play by the numbers. And even though that didn't work out, they really thought I did well. And as of now, it's just continuing to, you know, continue to work out and continue to stay in shape and get ready for whatever call may come up. And, you know, there's this new AAF league coming out. It's kind of like, another step in getting a chance and getting the NFL. So I'm looking into that as well as just remaining positive and staying ready.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that the AAF's having a combine coming up. Are you planning on attending to that? Is that going to be pretty much your stepping stone now to the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, it's my second chance around. It's an opportunity for guys to kind of slip through the cracks and didn't really get all the enough snaps they needed, you know, to get to the next level. So this is obviously the second best thing, and I think I'll do really good in that and get an opportunity to play in that. And I went to the combine in Atlanta where I met Mike Vick, which was the craziest thing in the world. Like, that was like, man, I couldn't have asked for a better. That was ridiculous. It was awesome meeting Mike Vick down there in the Atlanta combine. So now it's just waiting to get a call to hear back from something from here.
Would you say that Michael Vick is like your role model? I mean, you're both lefty quarterbacks, both very mobile in the pocket. Is that someone that you look up to? Because, you know, he's supposed to be an offensive coordinator in this league. Do you see him as really a role model and an influencer for you come the AAF season?
Yeah, man. You know, I wouldn't be playing if it wasn't for Mike Vick. So, I even had his shoes, man. Every color of his shoes and all that. So when I met him in real life and in person, and we even got to work out and he ran the quarterback drills and stuff like that, it was like, man, I have to play for the Atlanta AAF team. I mean, if anybody understands, you would know, you know, especially called to play as a left-hander, you know, it's tough for a left-hander to adjust to everybody in the league being right-handed, essentially. So, I mean, it sounds like a perfect combination to me. But, you know, I mean, I go wherever I can and do the best that I can. But, I mean, I've done so many cool experiences and had so many cool experiences playing football that would just even be the icing on the cake, you know. So, but yeah, overall, I mean, I'll be happy to play for anybody. I'm great with anybody I go to, but just from a childhood perspective, I mean, that was really cool. Like, two lefties are dangerous, I'm telling you.
You know, I also noticed that through your Instagram, you set up a studio for the sports media company Overtime. Are you planning on hosting a show for them, or what's the deal with that and how you're going to be implemented in their programming?
Oh, man, the Overtime opportunity is just, man, that's just another blessing. We got some big things coming up for sports, for Overtime Sports Media, and I get the opportunity to be a part of that. And, man, it's an innovative thing that we're doing over there at Overtime. We got a lot of good things we're cooking up that I hope you guys check out in the near future. But, you know, in the meantime, while I'm waiting on the call, this is a great opportunity for me to still keep my foot in football and still be an inspiration and reach out to others and help them, you know. So this is getting big.
And finally, going to Notre Dame football today, what are your expectations for them this season? You know, they've got a big matchup coming up against Michigan Week 1. ESPN has them going 10-2. Where do you see Notre Dame falling?
Man, I think, you know, the good thing about Notre Dame is that we'll always have a foot somewhere in that top 25 conversation because of the amazing talent, you know, that we bring in every year and that we have from the amazing coaching that we have. So, you know, for them, it's, I always think that it lies on the quarterback at the end of the day, and I have a lot of faith in Brandon. I think this is Brandon's breakout year to have the year he wants to have and to put his team in a good position to take that next step. So I know the other guys on the team are going to be supporting and doing their job and the next man in mentality that Coach Kelly has done a great job at. But, you know, I think when times get tough, I think Brandon's going to pull it out and lead them the way they want to go. Of course, I'm going to say they're going to go undefeated because that's my alma mater now. And I'm pretty much biased about it. But, you know, they're going to go as far as Brandon takes it.
Well, Malik, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was a pleasure to have you on today.
Man, thanks so much again. You know, shout out to you guys, man, for bringing me on.
What an honor it was to have Malik Zaire right here on Sports Talk Chicago. We talked about his great career at Notre Dame, his transfer to Florida, and his plans for his future professional career. It's now time for our Announcer's Call of the Day segment, and today's clip features Malik Zaire in action as he goes to work against the Texas Longhorns. Right now, the game's scoreless, and there's 6:34 left in the first quarter of play. Luckily for the Fighting Irish, Malik Zaire was there to make that change quickly. Let's listen in.
Play clock down to zero. They just get it off. Zaire with time over the middle, and it's a touchdown to who else but Will Fuller.
Well, there you have it. Malik Zaire once again making things happen on the gridiron. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click confirm on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. Every time a new podcast or article is posted, it'll go directly to your email. And finally, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018 calendar year is now available. Thank you again for listening in to today's show, and have a great day.